accession number 23447, reel 60.
Mr. Waller at Reel 16, we're talking about your demob, the demob process. So first you had this interview and you refused.
I was offered, they said, well, sign on for 12 months and you will be promoted to WO1. And I said, well, what? Ah, you'll go back to GHQ, which was then looking after the battalion record, and which was then based in Brussels. So, obviously it wouldn't, the pay for a WO1 would be a lot.
Company Sergeant Major? Sergeant Major.
I said, right. So, they said, you'll be based in Brussels, it'd be a nice life. Well, that wasn't quite true, because as I told you, we had the Black Mafia. A signal had already come through, and the signal sergeant said to me, they're moving GHQ from Brussels to Hamburg. So I knew, and I said, well, not really. I said, because they're going to be based in Hamburg. And the CO said to me, how do you know? I said, well, I said, I've got it on the grapevine, but what had happened, I'd seen the signal that came through before he had.
And what was wrong with Hamburg?
Well, it was half of it was in ruins, and wasn't much going on as compared to Brussels, which was a lively city.
So you refused?
Yeah.
So what happened next then?
So I just carried on as normal, and there was there was all the documents to prepare. You had a release booklet with so many pages in, and that was part of our job to fill them in. I actually was filling in my own, name, address, service, where you've been. And at the back was a thing for when you got demobbed, of course, you got so many weeks. You got a week for every year of your service. So I had six weeks demob leave to come. So officially, although my certificate there said July, I didn't actually, it was the August before I was actually finished, because I was on demob leave, and you had to fill it in because you had a number of slips in the back of the book to draw your army pay while you were in Civilian Street. You went along to the post office and drew it much the same way as you draw a pension or allowances today, and that was the system. So we just carried on, and apart from, we'd started a battalion magazine at the time.
Tell me about that.
Well, it was sort of local gossip and...
What was it called?
Shufti. Shufti. The old Arabic. Shufti. I've got a number of them in there. And we were getting them printed locally at the German printers, and you could have said that was black market, because we paid in goods rather than in cash to get the job done. They were quite happy to print them for some coffee and cigarettes, you see.
And what was it like? I mean, just what level of gossip was it?
Well, some serious, some local, some reported on what was happening. Only official stuff, they might say, oh, well, there was a victory parade in Berlin. And
so your input was as orderly, Sergeant, really?
Yeah, this came through, but I wasn't responsible for the magazine. We appointed a separate editor and staff to deal with that and arrangements to get them printed. And that was a common... When they'd have a report on the football match, and they'd have a photograph of the team, and a report on when we played the local Germans. And then there was one report which eventually said a report on the match and who had scored. And then at the end it said, it's noted that Sergeant Waller will soon be transferred and be under new management of his good lady wife. That was a sort of by going away mention, and they did actually send me a couple of copies after I demobbed, but then they dried up. So whether it
they what, could what happened with the demob then?
Well, I was put in charge of the party, and it was still somewhat chaotic travel movements then. There was so much going on. So they left the date blank of when we should. We were sent to a transit camp from Gluckstedt to a transit camp in Hamburg, and they left the blank date of when we were supposed to leave Hamburg, because they said, we don't know how long you'll be there, but you find out. So I went round and found out, and they said, oh, well, you know, you should go. So I said to the 8 to 10 lads, I went, right, give us your books, filled the date in, plonked them down, and I said, oh, good, somebody's got the date filled in. Half of them haven't got that. So we got away quickly. We were only there overnight, and we were on the next day, got on trains, and Cali, yeah, we went down to Cali, because previously on leave they were using the Hooker Holland Harwich route, but we went down to Cali to Dover, and then we went up to, and one thing in Washington, they were still doing it, they were very strict on taking arms, weapons home. By that, I'm talking about Lugers and such like. And they used to have SIB, Special Investigation Branch people, on the trains. Because I saw somebody, you know, I said, oh, I'm taking this home. And I've tucked it down my sock inside my gaiter. And when we got to Cali, he got off and they called him over, and they straight away went there. So somebody was sitting on the train when he gave it away. I was a bit annoyed, because when I got on the boat,
You weren't carrying anything with
you? No, I got... And when I got on the boat, they said, oh, shooting, sporting rifles and that are exempt. And I had a most wonderful two-barrel shotgun with a third barrel for the deer, and it was all silver-plated, the thing. It was a magnificent sporting weapon. And I could have brought it home, and I thought I wouldn't, and I left it behind. So I was quite sorry. I was quite annoyed over that, but I didn't know that I was on the boat. But I was very careful. I thought, no way am I going to take a risk of, you know, getting anything holed up in me demob.
So what happened?
So we got back, and well, we landed, and we were sent up to which order was it? We went to Woking, I think. There was a camp at Woking, and we spent the night there, and they were finalising our documentation and filling in certain things in our release book. Then the following day, we were sent to Guildford, which was where they were dishing out a civilian suit, trilby hat, tie, etc., and you went through in the same sort of fashion as when you got issued with them.
And what did you think of the demob suit?
It wasn't bad, I suppose, for the period of time. Mine lasted, I think, 12 months, you know, without falling to bits, and it was quite reasonable. I never wore the trilby hat I got. And, but the... Because when you got demobbed, you were allowed to keep certain items of your army gear. In other words, you were allowed to keep your army draw cellular or woolen, whichever you had, and your vest, woolen, great coat, battle dress. One of the things, you handed in all your equipment, obviously, webbing and so forth, mess tins and all that, but certain clothing you had. And I came home in those, and I in fact gave my great coat to my brother-in-law, who worked in a factory, and I gave him the... I never wore woolen underwear, long johns, only in very cold weather, and sort of passed all them on, you know.
Now, when you got back, you had your leave, but yeah. did you go back to your job?
I worked in the city then. Yeah, up in the city of London, near Liverpool Street, with a group of companies that, well, we were either head office or agents for a group of companies tied up with the stock exchange. Mainly.
Did you go back to them?
Yep, I went back to them. I went, visited them when I got back, and they said, oh, we're glad to see you back. When would you come? I said, well, I've got 6 weeks' leave, and they were a bit, so well, we could do with you back before then, you see. And I said, they were still down, they had, incidentally, although they were in the city, they had evacuated down to Rickmansworth.
You mentioned, yeah.
Yeah, and they were still there when I first came back. But then they, before my 6 weeks were up, they moved back to London, into the city.
Now, how did you settle back into that job? Because you'd been a sergeant,
you'd
had a 4, 5, 6 of war, you know.
Well, it was very strange, you know, sort of game.
In what way?
In a routine of 9 to 5, you know, and going to catch a bus or a trolley bus or underground, you know, every day. But
did you find it difficult?
Well, not so bad, because strangely enough, my friend who I'd worked with a long time, he'd been in during the war, although I never came across it. He was in the London Rifle Brigade, which was same as the Tower Hamlet Rifles, the Territorial Battalion. And others had been in the pilot in the RAF and such like. So there were quite a few of us that were in the same boat and came out. And there was so much to do. I mean, one of the things that had to be part of our job was with transfer of stock. You had a transfer deed, you know, when stock was bought and sold, shares. And they all had to be entered in registers. Well, when they had safes, which were the height of that unit, you know, this unit along the wall. When you own them up, was packed with them. They hadn't been touched for a few, but virtually there was 5 to 6 years back work to catch up on. So we were kept pretty busy, you know.
So you settled in quite quickly
because, see, bearing in mind I'd had almost a 12-month in the orderly room, so that was a sort of.
Did you have any sort of mental or physical effects of the war, either good or bad? You know, I'm not saying it was bad or good, but how did it
Yes, physical. I was still, I wouldn't exactly say nightmares, but, you know, something, there was a noise during the night. I'd suddenly, you know, sit bolt upright and things like that. And to give you an idea, during the war, I came on one leave. It was from Germany, and what happened, the first leave party had came on leave, but there were German troops on either side. They got ambushed, and they lost the truck and all the occupants. Now, I was in charge of the second one, and the orders were we mustn't take rifles or arms with us, despite the fact we were in Germany and had travelled through. And I thought that was a bit stupid, and they said to me, well, what are you going to do, Sergeant? I said, stick a box of grenades on the back. I said, and I've got a 45 that I picked up somewhere. I said, if you want to take something, tuck it in your inside pocket and say nothing. Consequently, when I got home, I chucked it under the pillar when I went to sleep. And my sister-in-law, we were staying with our sister-in-law at the time, my wife's sister-in-law, my sister-in-law, and she came in with a cup of tea and heard this noise, and the first thing I did, I whipped round with this bloody pistol and nearly shot her. So I didn't do that again. So that was a reaction.
And you had that after?
You had that after effect of very nervous reaction, and with certain things happening, I think it must have taken 12 months before you started to calm down to what I call normal. I was still getting odd effects. If I got a cold, my malaria thing would flare up. I was getting that. I found that working in an office, particularly under artificial light, that my eye, which I'd got hit, was playing me up. I was having a bit of trouble with my leg at times and all when we'd gone over the mine and up there, and you know, that was giving me a bit of bother, but other than that, it wasn't too bad. Within a year, I'd got back to fairly normal. And then, of course, I had other things. When I came out, the house in which I was, I lived with my parents before the war, my mother had evacuated to Whitney and got a job with a firm that evacuated there. I got remarried, but the house in London, North London, Tottenham, she had let to my cousin, and she was living there. So I said, I'm not going to sort of live in with them. So we had an upstairs flat in the house, you know, two rooms and a kitchenette, with the wife's sister. But after a few months, my cousin moved out, way down to Dunstable, and the house was done. So I moved back in. So I had this to occupy my mind, and life was looking rosy. And I'd suddenly got a six-room house back, and I was living in that. And
So you stayed at the you carried on working at the stock exchange.
Yeah,
that was your career.
Yeah.
Now, what about the old contacts with your old comrades? Was that important to you? Did you join?
Yeah, I joined the regiment. You know, when you left, got demobbed, you got a thing, you know, from the colonel in chief of the regiment, hope you will join the regimental association, and thank you all for all your service and that sort of thing. And I joined the Rifle Brigade Association.
What did that involve for you? I mean, what did they do for you as well?
They did have a Rifleman's Aid Society, but I didn't qualify to call upon that. But most of the functions were held in Winchester, and I wasn't in a financial position to keep travelling there. I also got a phone call from an old army pal, and said he'd got a spare ticket for the first Alamein reunion with Montgomery and Vera Lynn, and I went along to that. But other than that, I met old friends, but you know, it was a question of when I might go to their house, you know, and I kept in touch, you know, from time to time. It was on a loose friendship basis rather than through any formal one.
But now you've been on trips back.
Because what happened, you see, with my job, I went there, and I was back there about 4 years, and then...
Went where, sorry?
I you know, working in the city. And suddenly I got the feeling, well, what am I doing? All I'm doing is working, doing all this work. Because by that time I'd gone back to the City of London College to try and get accountants qualifications. And I thought, well, all I'm doing is working away here, trying to make £1 million for a person who's already a director, who's already a millionaire. What am I getting out of it? It didn't seem much point to me life. And I suppose I had twinges as well, what happened over 6 years. And I saw it advertised, and I had a friend who put in a word for me. And I went into hospital administration.
What as?
Well, initially I was with a sort of general thing, you know, general thing. And then once I got about 4 years' experience. I applied. It became vacant up here because it was an independent hospital, you see. And I applied for it.
In Sunderland?
In Sunderland, yeah. And I came up to Sunderland and covered the northeast, which was from Berwick to Scarborough across to Barrow and up. And it was administering the, for the membership, doing admissions, eventually running a clinic, orthopaedic clinic, in below the office and so forth. And generally, and I somehow felt well.
That was your real career?
Yeah. I'm now, instead of taking life, I'm saving it. And I sort of felt rather good about it, you know, and spent the rest of my life doing that.
Now, what about your trips to... you've been back to Iraq and Libya.
Yeah, yes.
With Lady Randall. Does she organise? Avril Randall.
Yeah, she...
Can you tell me how that came about?
Well, how I got to know her was on the Channel 4 teletext. Army Pals, or what it's Service Pals is called. And one day I saw this thing, can anybody please tell me where 2nd Royal Tank Regiment was in such a date? Daughter of Desert Rat. I thought, oh, I might be able to find out, I've got stuff. Following week was another one. Can anybody tell me where camp number so-and-so and so-and-so was? Daughter of Desert Rat. And it had a phone number. So I thought, well, I can find out these camp numbers. You see, I knew about them. And it became a hobby of mine. So I phoned her up and spoke to her. And she said, oh, I'll send you my father's service record. And when it turned up, that's when I saw Lady Randall. Oh, bloody hell, what have I got myself into here, you see? So later on, she said, did I know that the Libyan government had issued an invitation for British troops, old 8th Army, Africa Corps, Italian and Australian, to go back to Libya, to Tobruk, at the Libyan government's expense? And I said, no. I said, I put my name down through the... By then, I was a member of the 8th Army Veterans Association. I said, I put my name down. I said, but whether I'll be able to be successful, I don't know. So she said, oh, well, I'm tied up with that. I'll put your name on my list. So I said, thanks very much. I still hadn't met her. So it comes up and... we all turned up at Gatwick. I stopped at the hotel the previous night. All turned up at Gatwick, milling around, hundreds of us, and I'm standing there. So I said, what's the hold up? Because we were supposed to get visas issued at a special desk. And the chap said, I reckon it's going to be cancelled. I said, why? He said, well, President Clinton was on the television last night shouting about these Libyan terrorists. And true enough, it was cancelled. And I saw grown men standing there in tears, you know, longing to go back. So I thought, well, I said, do anybody know where Lady Randall is? And they said, that's her, I'm wishing about. And because she had tried to contact me at Blackpool at the reunions, without success. So I went up, got hold of her, and I said, oh, by the way, I'm Doug Waller. And I've been trying to meet you for ages. And we got chatting, and I spent the day, and then I went back to relatives in London to stay with them, forgot all about it. And then she phoned me up and said that she was determined to get back to Tobruk. She was going to organise a trip herself. Would I be interested in going? And I said, yeah. She said, well, you'll have to, you know, won't be an invitation. You'll have to pay for it yourself. And I said, oh, that's fair enough. So I went in and got together with the party, and off we went. We went back, flew out to Cairo.
The veterans, how many?
On the first trip, there were about 20. And we went back, flew to Cairo. We got a coach, stopped off Alamein, Mersin Matru, all the different places, you know. Went to Tobruk and came back again. And then
What was it like?
Oh, it was very nostalgic. It was fascinating to go back, you know, and see the place that after so many years, you know. And
did you go to Adam Holfer?
No, we didn't get down as far as that at the time. But not on that trip. But later on, as I say, we did this trip, and then we came back, and it's sort of nice meeting these people. And then later on, she said, oh, I've got another trip. She said, I'm going, she said, but I've got about 38 of them going. And I said, well, it's too many of me to handle on my own. So she said, I told them I want an assistant tour leader. She said, would you do it? I said, well, what does it mean? She said, well, keeping an eye, but it means a free trip. I said, right, you're on. So I then went back again. And I said, we had a bigger party that time. And we went there, and things had improved in as much that it was a magnificent hotel in Tobruk, and in the ballroom they rigged up a big Arab tent, and we all sat down on the floor and ate our meal Arab style, and they all in national local dress. And
so you enjoyed the trip?
Oh yeah, fascinating. And went back to the old battlefield, and you always get somebody a idiot, you know. I remember I was sitting there at Sidi Rezaeg. I said to Admiral, I said, look at me. I said, at my age, I should be sitting in Winchester in a retired rifleman's cottage, gazing at the dreaming spires of Winchester Cathedral. I said, what am I doing? Sitting in the bloody desert. I said, at Sidi Rezaeg. I said, it's all your fault. She said, go on, you're enjoying it. I said, yes, I am. And so, you know, then some idiot comes up with a couple of Italian hand grenades. I said, what are you doing with them? She said, oh, got holes in, they're all right, the sand's coming out. I said, well, you stop there, and when I get 300 yards away, I'll tell you to throw them. I didn't do silly things like that. So, that was the next trip. And then the next thing that happened was I went back with Lady Randall and Sam Bradshaw, the chairman of the 8th Army Battalion. The three of us were invited back by the Libyan government to negotiate this original trip, which had been cancelled. So we went to Tripoli, met the foreign minister, and stayed there for about a week, and came back, and it actually took place, except it was slightly different.
So they free trip for the veterans?
Yeah, well, they had to pay their airfare to Malta. And then they got on a boat, and then everything was free from then on. So it cost them a couple of £100, but it at least got it established, you know. What would have cost them £1,200 cost them £200, so a lot of them could afford it, which they wouldn't have done otherwise. So, I went down for the last march past at Tobruk and carried the standard for the Rats of Tobruk Association. That was last year we did that.
Do you hope to go again?
I don't know, I think so. But the last trip was quite a thing, because we took a bugler with us, we took an independent video man who makes videos for... and Michael Palin and his crew turned up, and so hopefully the book and the television will be out later in the year.
Thank you very much.